Your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Monday, November 21st, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. I am your host today. This is C.A. Nuri, and I happen to have Catherine. Yep. Catherine is with me, and I'm making sure, producer, can you hear Catherine on her mic? Her mic is loud?
Can you hear me?
Right good. Here. Yeah. So that's good. And we up and down between whether we should have an open line Monday, which is what I'm leaning toward, because our guests actually cancelled on us, and we have ideas on what we want to do. But then Catherine said, "Hey, I want to interview you," and I said, "Interview me?
Yeah.
I'm not that interesting. I'm kind of boring. Nobody wants to know who C.A. Nuri is." But I said, since I have her inside the main chair today to answer the texts, to answer the phones, and also to do the text line and everything, I said, "Hey, might as well just give it to her one time."
I actually think that you're a man of such mystery, intrigue, and enchantment.
You think
that's just the wardrobe aside. And I do appreciate you being such a great mentor that it's given me the privilege of this chair. The power has gone to my head. And I do think that people would like to know who they're hearing from. Like, what context are your views coming from? You play the devil advocate so well, but why are you here? What journey has brought you from where you were born to this chair with your views and with the desire to be here, to serve, and to speak your mind in a country when the be challenging to do so? I think that's a story worth hearing on a Monday morning.
You are spreading it thick. You're trying to make me butter me up and make it sound important, like I significant inside this Bahamas.
I'm just feeding off of the glow that you are. I think you're one of the nation builders, and that we are being critiqued and challenged in our thoughts and views, and that is what makes changes and challenges the status quo that exists and helps us to be strong in what we think or say that we need to act in ways to change which needs to be changed.
Look where this woman is going. So that's it. It won't be an open line Monday today. I'm going to allow Catherine to do her interview with me. But before we start to find out all the business about who I am and who I is and what it is about, what did you do this weekend? Because I wanted to talk about that. Now you want to talk about me. So let me start off with that to get that over with. What did you do this weekend?
I actually had an extraordinary weekend in the Bahamas. It was packed. That we survived the war zone that is Village Road. And I participated in my church booth at the Jollification. I was baking all week with my nieces and cousins to prepare for that. And so the Jollification, if you have attended, is one of those events. It's like the International Cultural Festival, any of the great festival events that Erin, I know, talks about on her show all the time, that brings a diverse group of Bahamians together to see our local artisans. And in that way, it is always cool. It is always creative. It's always unique. It has the foods, the flavors, and just on display, such a centerpiece of Bahamian artistry. So I find it a treat. Now, the challenge this year, of course, that every WhatsApp group that was in the vicinity was blown up about was, how will it survive the mud pit that is Village Road? Now, I have very minimal sympathy on this because I am a Queens College mom that toes that line every day, twice a day, unless my mom saves me. And so I was like, ha, these weaklings, they don't know what it's like. But Despite the rain on Sunday, it occurred. We always support a Bahamas National Trust, because we must, because it's essential to preserving that which is the beauty and treasure of our land. And I think that it was a good and healthy turnout. I was listening to Erin on the way here, and I know she's a faithful vendor. Walking around, I've done festivals for decades. I've worked festivals from before it was legal for children to work festivals. And so seeing the old guard there, seeing them having survived the pandemic, seeing the new products out and about, and even people from our family islands coming in with what they've been working on, it was encouraging and heart-wrenching.
I hear you mention child labor, but I'm not going to let it slide, and go ahead.
I am an original child laborer in the Bahamas. Mm-hmm. I've worked for Events by Alexandra since before I could walk. And I think that it's healthy to have children in these settings, and that they should suffer and have like the dirt grimed between their toes so it can't come off for days working these booths, meeting these people, learning the service industry, being, you know, having the positive interactions, having the people telling you put too much onion on their sandwich, things like that. I think this is necessary. And you and I both have hospitality service backgrounds, and there's nothing that gives you resilience and courage like that.
And you mentioned suffer.
Yes.
And that's a good way to segue into the women's suffrage, suffering movement. You did something like that over the weekend.
I thought that you were going to talk about your life. That's a good way to segue into talking about my life.
No. I see, these are the things I wanted to talk about. Let me get away from it. The women's suffrage singers over the weekend.
And so I had then, just because I didn't do enough this weekend, I had to go to the Women United talk that was a talk hosted by Women's United, which screened the Marion Bethel film Womanish Ways. It came out in 2012, and that talked about the women's suffrage movement and the great dames and ladies that held the line and push towards that initial right to vote. This is the coming up next week. We're celebrating the 60th anniversary of women's right to vote in the Bahamas. And it was a riveting and extraordinary documentary. Have you seen it?
No, but I guess I need to see it now.
No, it's essential viewing. It's essential viewing for anyone who's a Bahamian, students especially, because sometimes we don't know the wealth and the courage that is our culture. And we were supposed to talk to Mr. Dave Williams today on the show again, following up on the marital rape amendments to the bill. But unfortunately, and I think everyone understands that cars don't always like this weather, but I think that when we talk about the present things, the minutia of these laws, the small anecdotes or the big fears that surround them, we still have to look back towards history and why we are where we're at, where we have come from, and why it's important that we continue to press onward in inclusivity as a nation. That we need to look at where we're at and go forward together as a people for us all. Sometimes when we look, and only because I had prepared for this conversation, we look at the amendments to the Marital Rape Act, it's seen as something that's exclusory, that it's leaving people out, that it's putting men under attack, that it's a creator of fear. But it is not. It's something that's supposed to be bringing us wholly together as a country, and that constitutional equality is essential if we are going to stand on a world stage as a people and say that we are proud as a Bahama land to treat us all equally and to protect all people as best we can. And that these are not foreign ideas coming in. These are some things that we've always tried to fall in with the UN conventions that protected the rights of children, women, and all citizens. This is us keeping up with the times. This is us claiming a future for our sons and daughters. This is not an attack on men. This is protection of men. You know what I found cool about this whole presentation? And we had the best of the best of Bahamian women there last night. We had our Prime Minister's spouse, Mrs. Anne Marie Davis. We had Dame Janet Boswick present, and I had chills as she spoke about being, I think, the only other woman in the House the day that Dame Doris Johnson presented the bill. She made her famous speech that was basically petitioning that women had the right to vote. She was fresh back from college. And they're like, we got fresh, educated meat, let's use her. But this history is that which we need to look to and say, the push we have to have women on equal footing in this country is something that serves us all. But most of these women, most of these famous names that we hear coming around and celebrating and hanging up in Rawson Square, they did it initially because they wanted to help their husbands. They wanted to help their husbands get elected. They said, if women had the right to vote, our husbands would be in power. This was not a takedown of men. This is like, let's stand together in partnership as we march together to hold this great nation up. And I just hope as we continue to have these conversations, everyone's like, are you really talking about that again? I'm like, forever. The suffrage movement in its limited way, in its official way as it petitioned, it was nonpartisan when it began, but in its official when it began, took 11 years to come to any kind of official fruition. It was a long haul, and it was because women did what they do best. They annoyed that. They nagged, they birded, they petitioned, and they spoke the truth that needed to be speak. Last time I was on the show, I'll say this last point before we move on to our interesting man of the hour, but I'm someone called and it sticks in my brain because it's a silencing thing. So I thanked the caller, and he said, "You sound like an angry woman, and if I could psychoanalyze you, it would be that you have something against men, et cetera, et cetera." Being called an angry woman is something that is the mute button on women. If you're a woman with any kind of brought up C, with any kind of breeding, with any kind of goodness or good girlness in you, you don't want to be seen as troublesome. You want to be seen as a peacemaker, helpmaker, non-troublemaker in society. So it's something that is easily thrown out. It's the first and most boring attack on women, but I'm also grateful for it because it's true and it happens. And I'm like, there is no great change. There is no push for equality that doesn't happen without anger. And one of the things covered last night in the documentary, they talked about Burma Road and the fact that the contract that followed was trying to pacify the fear of the black rage, as it was called in the documentary. The government, the Duke of Windsor, was so afraid of the black rage that might lead to change or issues that they created the contract that shipped our 5,000 Bahamian males out so that it would pacify that tension at the time. And so the fact that I'm like, slavery was not ended without anger. Any kind of injustice was not ended without people being angry. But it would be easy for a woman like me. I come from a point of privilege. You always like to tell me about my color. But I come from a loving family. I was educated well, QC Comet. I had the chance for tertiary education abroad, which I sought to. I have never starved. And so it would be easy for me to say, it doesn't bother me. I got a good husband. He's not beating me or raping me. I'm fine. Why do I have to care? And again, this came up through the documentary, is that there's so many good women that stood on the sidelines because they were fine. They were comfortable. Their husbands were taking care of them. There was no need for them to make a push for it. But my call, and the reason that we will continue to be the clarion call for this issue, that we will continue to give a stern reminder, as a quote from last year, a stern reminder that constitutional equality is essential for us to not be embarrassed as a nation, that we will continue to talk about this as advocates for the women that live with real, notable violence within their lives and a protection for the men so that they don't have to fight for the women because the law is there also. So amen, hallelujah. We can move on to the next subject if you like, which is the man, the legend, the myth. Now, I have always sat in some kind of awe of this male. But you can call a woman a female, that'd be rude, right? Of this man. And whenever we listen to the radio, I sometimes think, from whence have these people come? From who brought you up? Who born you? Who married you? Who do you father? Who are your people that you are on this stage sharing your views with such authority, with such alacrity, with such divisiveness sometimes? Who are you that you are here? And what is your intent? CA, I love so much, and he does such a good job of just being kicked off of Facebook every 2 minutes because he has a certain technique when it comes to inspiring, inciting, and inviting conversation that I'm like, where have we developed this art of war from? What has created you? So once upon a time, a long time ago, in the city of Nassau, there was born. Were you born in Nassau?
I was born in Nassau, yeah. Actually. I'm a Nassau-born man. Mm-hmm. I claim Acklands because of my father. My father was born in Acklands. My grandfather was born in Acklands. My great-grandfather was born in Acklands. And I'm not necessarily sure where my great-great-grandfather was born. I'm connected to the Hannah Hasty Tynes, like everyone in Ackland, and that's through marriage. You see, we have Hannahs in my family, and you see that I'm on that Hannah Hasty Tynes family tree, and I've done some research on that too, and I helped them with their family trees on all three of the families. And since then, I've actually assisted a number of Ackland's surnamed families that I do on the side. I went to a public primary school.
One moment before we carry on with that. Would you say there's any personality or family traits or island traits that come from people from Acklands? Would you say, if you're from Acklands, people from Acklands are known to be?
Stereotypes, right? They say we cheap.
Yeah.
But I just cheap because I cheap. I just have a little bit of money and I don't believe in spending it. But I'm coincidentally cheap. I don't like people talking about my money. I get offended very easily when you demand my money.
You can lend me some money.
No. You know, and I just get vexed at it, like when you speak about my money all the time. So yeah, I'm mean with that, but that's a coincidence.
And that was born from a historical necessity because you, in Ackland, you didn't have much, and so you kept what you had and took care of your family, right? Yeah. Would you consider yourself a true Bahamian?
Like true Bahamian. But I'm a modern Bahamian. I'm a modern Bahamian because I adopted and accepted my Caribbean roots. My mother is Jamaican. She migrated to the Bahamas in 1971 ish to be a cook. And got married here and lived here since then. And then I was born.
And how did your mother meet your father?
I don't know. No, I never asked that question.
You need to go.
I assumed he came into the restaurant bar that she was working and they struck up a conversation and then it came some years later.
That's how it worked for my husband.
Yeah, that's how it works. Yeah, that's how I assume it worked out.
And they maintained a marriage and had, and who is, do you have siblings?
And that's an entertaining question.
Yes.
And a number of person will question siblings. I have a brother someplace, my father's child. Mm-hmm. And I have a sister, which is my mother's child. So, but they're all 17, 18 years older than I am.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up by myself. I consider myself an only child because I grew up by myself. Like I was saying earlier, I went to a public school until I passed the examination to go to one of those private schools in Fox Hill there. And and that's how I started my life there.
And it's not product placement to name your schools. Can you name and claim your school?
Yeah, look where you're going. I went to SAC. There's only one school in the Bahamas, actually. And so I went there and everyone else didn't go to any school. So I'm one of those.
This was one of my jollification questions because we had a case of an intermarriage, a comet marrying a sack.
Oh, that's a blasphemous. Yeah.
No, and it's painful because they're going to have that conversation.
And which school to send their child to?
Like, which sin shall you commit?
Well,
and I was a comet.
Sensible persons won't send their children to QC, but it is what it is.
And I was a comet back when the big red machine used to just obliterate us. It used to be painful to take the bus to SAC to play in our little senior girls soccer team. But but other than that, I'm sad. Yeah, that's unforgivable in your nature. But I would say, and the conversation I had with the gentleman, the jollification, hi, Jane's husband. Hi, Chad. Was the fact that...
Chad. Chad Munnings. He's a good guy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he graduated me, actually.
He's not a Dolphins fan, so it's fine.
Yeah.
Also, yes, so that's where the marriage tension is, Jane and Chad. They're so glad they're talked about on the radio today. But, I mean, it's uncomfortable. It's like, you know, inter-religions marrying. It's a thing. And I think that Village Road would be a big deterrent to anyone considering Queen's College at the moment, but I love my school, and I'm happy my children are there on their field trip today, touring the Bahamian... the best places to see.
Yep.
So would you think that your education or whatever institution was, would you say that prepared you well for the rest of the world?
Yes, it did. I think I would needed more support after high school. When I attended SAC, I was the only one from my primary school to pass for the test. Mm-hmm. So that was a big step.
That a thing that a lot of people did that to apply to go into private school?
We applied just to see where we stood and compared to private school students, right? And so that's why I took one examination and I was SAC to see if I am adequate, smart enough. So I took the test and then I thought I was going Donald Davis. I was ready to go. I already got my green pant. And my mother said she's going to sacrifice.
Back then, they were still French toes. Back then, what was it? What do we wear?
We don't. I wore gabardine my entire 6 years at that institution.
And what were you like as a child? Were you rude, rowdy?
I was an introvert. I was an introvert. So it took me years to become an introvert, extrovert type person. Now, very quiet, very reserved, and so at my last years, I started a breakout to become the CA Nuri who I am now.
And you're an arts brain.
I'm artisan oriented. Mm-hmm. I write poetry. I write essays a lot. I write plays, stuff like that. Literature was my subject. History was my subject. So you'll see that even now, I would speak on the lines of literature and history as a regular conversation for me.
And that's something you grasped early. That wasn't something that you had to strain to do. That was your God instilled talent.
I don't know. Yeah. Firstly, I came into SAC via math because I'm dyslexic. So I have issues with reading. So you give me anything more than two paragraphs, you see I look at you fiercely and say, why are you doing this to me? And it frustrates me to read, even though I like news and information. It just takes an effort. So I got into SAC, and when you hear if I remember what my SAT scores, you see that, hey, this guy is good at math, but not English, not in grammar, not too well. But in high school, I made an effort to learn syntax and say, okay, this is the right way to put these things. So I gravitate to literature, and literature to me was like history, mm-hmm. especially Greek mythology and stuff like that. So that was my claim, learning about Greek mythology, African mythology, and stuff like that, Roman mythology.
And I will say that, interestingly enough, a lot of the most famous poets were known to be dyslexic, because, and it uncaged them, because you don't think of words and the forms and syntax, et cetera, in the way that is traditional. You're more able to play with words. You're more able to play with rhythms and to fit them in ways that are non-traditional and therefore clever and catching.
Perhaps that's what it is, because since I had issues with grammar and stuff like that, and always make an effort to learn it, mm-hmm. and perfect it. And I was bad at it. I guess literature, say, okay, I can write any kind of way without someone correcting the spelling and the grammar. So I guess that could be it.
And I could definitely see, I mean, and I think some of it's unpublished, but I could definitely see in some of your writings the influence of this mythology.
Yes,
That was the magic that captured your childhood imagination. I mean, did you do anything outside of the classroom? Could you catch crabs with flip-flops like me? Like,
no.
Did you climb trees?
Well,
were you soft?
I'm not necessarily soft.
Were you sporty?
No, I'm not necessarily sporty, even though I played soccer.
How did you express yourself?
I rode bicycle from East Street to Adelaide like almost daily.
You came by my mango farm.
More likely, because I remember when I was younger, the white population out Adelaide and out West used to leave bicycles for me. So when I used to drive past the neighborhood and I saw the bicycle on the lawn, they left for me.
It was a donation.
I remember taking it back and saying, see what these white people left for me? They're so
library.
Nice.
It's
my first interaction. You know? I said, they leave all kind of toys. They always turn away stuff. So yeah, that was me growing up. I played soccer. Where I live was a gang-infested area. So yeah. I knew about crime. I knew about ducking and dodging bullets. I knew about getting gang. I knew about being arrested by the police for seemingly doing nothing, for loitering. I knew the transition of saying the police are my friends and trying hard to believe it and disagreeing with it. Mm-hmm. So I have an inner city upbringing and an inner city appreciation, and I still tend to go back to donate. So I donate a lot of books. I do a lot of charity events in the inner city, in the neighborhood I came from originally from.
So the literacy support that you do. So coming from that, I think, is a strength to where you are now. I think that that's a street cred and the hair on your chest that you need to be in the seat you're in right now. But what was the atmosphere in your home? What was the parenting style of your parents? What was it like to be a child of your parents?
So I grew up with my mother and my stepfather, right? And my stepfather was a stoic man, no emotions. He didn't show any concern for my welfare per se, none. Now, in his later age, you can see there is definitely love there, in daring form. But when I was younger,
As a child, you weren't able to see.
No. I thought he didn't like me, and definitely I didn't like him. When he married my mom, was hardworking. I remember there were a point at school when I didn't see my mom for weeks, and the reason why she had three jobs in order to pay school fee. So I went to school for 7 o'clock. And my mom went to work for 6 o'clock. So she left breakfast and ironed the clothes. And I went after school, I either was in clubs or soccer. And so when I came home about 6-7 o'clock at night, my mom was already at her second job. And so she didn't get home until about 1-2 in the morning.
So she was exhausted, exhausted, providing.
And then leave again at 6 again. And so I just knew that she was home because I see the movement of her in the house.
When you're working that hard as a woman, any woman listening that's a working mother with kids knows that could take your Jesus humor, humility, humanity to be that hardworking. But what would you describe your mother as in adjectives other than that?
She's hardworking. She's dedicated. She made a lot of sacrifice. Like I said, I shouldn't have gone to SAC. That put the family in some financial bind. And I was very much unfortunate.
I wonder what the fees were back in the day. It wasn't like the it wasn't the highest rent school around.
Yeah. I remember when I started SAC, I think it was $450 per term, which is high. I was a packing boy for a while. Mm-hmm. And my Saturday's tip was more than my mother's entire week's paycheck. At one point in time, my Saturday, when I went packing grocery, I started from 7. And then, of course, City Market never to pay you. So I was there until 10 o'clock at night. And then I'd go mop the store and put the grocery back and whatever it is to have the privilege of working there. And so I remember my entire tip, I would have like, what's about $70-ish for the whole day.
Wow.
And I would have bring that home to my mother. And then she would give me like $5 out of that and say, this is for you. And the rest of the money was hers to do. But again, paying bills.
And in an adult brain now, as you look back on your stepfather and you see something different. But you you look at your mother and you understand.
Yeah, I understand. Yes. I have a compassion, an endearing feeling just seeing her. You know, I seen the wrinkles in her forehead. I remember what she went through to grow me up and the sacrifice. She was the one, if hurricane come, she was the one who put up the storm shutters. Mm-hmm. So I would be there to, as a young boy, 6'7", to hold
so
up the
board. You had the strong woman.
Yeah, she was the strong one. She was like the alpha woman.
Listening to this suffragette documentary again last night, the fact that like the women that survived their men being on contract and seeing them maybe for a week or two a year, and usually that just meant they left them with another baby on the way, it made them resilient and strong in a way. And they talk about the children that came from the households of these essentially single mothers and how they were, you know, they had a different view of women, motherhood, and leadership than children that maybe came before that era. I mean, I love being the one to read the text for the first time ever. These are fantastic. Great show as usual. She buttering you up to help pay that light bill, please.
Yeah.
Can you help me pay my light bill?
Yeah,
you know, he loves talking about money. Mm-hmm. We just did that. I was like, I'm sure my husband would be most thrilled to help on that one. I'm scared to check my inbox because I'm waiting for the latest BPL to come through because everyone's been telling me horror stories. Great show as usual. Trust me, Auckland's people cheap, worse than Chinese cheap. They're damn they're cheap. Well, great show as usual. SAC has to be a cult because I have a cousin, 65, and still talking about his time at SAC. I personally think that's pathetic. Okay, QC Commons, thanks for texting in. And by the way, we do have telephone lines, even though it's a, is it a closed show day?
No.
We have a text line that's 422-4796, 422-GR96, or you can call in at 323-6232, 325-4316 or 325-4259. And well, we have a caller?
Just mentioned the producer.
Producer, we have a caller. This is so exciting.
You can speak to the mic.
I can speak to the mic. Hello? I can't hear anybody.
Hello? No, there you go.
Hello.
Go ahead, caller. We can hear you.
Hello, sir. Go ahead.
It's a bad line, so probably you would have to hang up and call back.
Okay. Couldn't hear that.
Couldn't hear that
I
person.
I got so excited about
we'll
my
call
first.
Call back again. Go ahead again. Producer, patch the caller through. There's nothing on the line. Can I pick it up? Go ahead, caller. Can you hear me?
Hello.
Oh, go ahead, caller.
Excuse me. Mr. Nuri, how you doing? Sparky here.
Go ahead, Sparky.
Good morning.
That was
Hi,
me on
Sparky.
The other line. That other line is really terrible. You know, Mr. Dory, listening to you this morning, I always thought I had a twin brother out there somewhere.
We look alike, Sparky.
It's a family reunion show.
Yeah, you and me with the suntan lotion on.
Yeah.
It's the black side of me.
There you go.
But it sounds like you grew up in my house. Everything is almost identical. The reading, the maps, the sports, to growing up by yourself. Although I was in a family with a mother and a father, an older brother, older cousin, and a sister, it was just like I was by myself. Because everybody was a different age and was doing their own thing. My mother was similar to your mother, hard working, different jobs. My father was a bartender, so when you wake up in the morning, he's already walked, didn't have a car to, he didn't get a car till I actually graduated out of Government High in 1970.
The
he got his first car. When we woke up in the morning, my father had already walked to work back at Robinson Bar. Don't come home until 10 o'clock at night. Hello? Hello?
Yeah, we are listening
to
you. Go ahead.
No, that's, we're listening.
My mother would wake in the day at Texaco Gas Station, Bay Street, Miss A.B. Malcolm, and then at night she would be a switchboard operator at the hospital.
Mm.
My sister, 2 years younger than me, would always be around by some female cousins of ours. My brother was 9 years older. He would be with his crew.
Mm.
And my cousin was with his crew. So I practically grew up by myself in the Roddy. Doing shining shoes, washing windows, parking at Seatime, sitting in market, practically putting myself through school with the help of the father that wasn't there, going to Eastern Junior, Eastern Senior, then on to Government High and graduating in 1970. But when it came to buying books and buying uniforms and all that kind of thing, I practically did it myself.
Yeah.
So back in the day, we didn't have all these frills and cellular phones and computers and everything you did with pencil and paper, ruler, and so forth. And most of the stuff you did out your head, your calculations, out your head. You couldn't carry no computer or no calculator to school with you.
Yeah.
You really had nothing to keep you occupied in the evening other than skating, flying kites, and everything. So we were always exercising, being busy, playing softball in the schoolyard, doing all kind of things, exercising. We wasn't big and fat and having no diabetes and things.
And funnily enough, those are all of the things that they tell us we're supposed to be doing with our children now to keep them healthy. Get them outside, get them with a kite, get them with a stick and ball playing outside. So thank you. Yes, we're going to keep talking to Mr. Nuri to find out, but thank you.
But I want to say one thing before I go.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
I remember three years in a row, me and a few guys, we organized something called Kites and Gadgets up on Fort Charlotte. Me and Dr. Off and the Pigs and them and the guys down in the valley.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we spent a Saturday picking up children from all the special schools. Well, we did all the things up there, fly kites. We gave out trophies and everything, flying kites, doing box cards, skating, hula hoop. Hopscotch, all those things. We did it 3 years in a row. We had thousands of children up on Fort Charlotte. I've been trying to do that again for years, but I can't get a sponsor no more. If we could do that once a year, just call it a Children's Day, to get the children out, to show the parents that take these cellulars out of these children's hands, get them exercising again. They wouldn't have these diabetes and things. Have a good day.
Thank you, and thank you for calling in. I think the change of childhood, and as we talked about to Mr. Nuri about his childhood, I think every parent goes through. I did it today on my way to school. My children said, can't you find that video of that one time? And I did we didn't used to have cell phones, and you used to have to wait for pictures to come from a shop, et cetera, talk to them. And it's a time unknown. And now, as they say, as purity in children, they try to get you outside and doing these things. And you said you grew up in the area that you had gangs everywhere, that the police could tap you and take you for something you were assumed to have done. How did you not get involved with that?
My stepfather was no nonsense, aggressive. Mm-hmm. Like I said,
he wouldn't play.
And mind you, I didn't see him as loving.
Mm-hmm.
He's just as abrupt, and he was abrupt with me. He was abrupt with my mom also. And my mom was a stern Jamaican, you know, West Indian, who says education must come first.
Yes.
But she had a fourth grade education, so I was smarter than my mother by grade seven.
Better educated than
so she couldn't help me with my homework.
Yes.
So there was nothing that she could have. She kept me company.
Mm-hmm.
I remember there were days where I said, Mama, I didn't understand. I just don't understand this,
and
right?
And
she sat there and said, well, we'll try to understand it together.
That's me with my second grader's math homework.
That was overwhelming. That was overwhelming. But I just don't understand. And there's nobody there to fill in the gap. So I had that for a while.
So, and I did note that you say you played soccer, which is not necessarily the most Bahamian sport, but the World Cup is on. Are you watching?
If the World Cup is on, definitely I will watch. But I played soccer.
What position were you?
Defense. In fact, I even ended up being the captain of the soccer team at one time, too.
So that's where your leadership quality started to come through, because SAC don't let just anybody be a captain of a team.
Can you imagine of a team? Yeah, I was pretty good. I'm pretty good at it.
Did you enjoy it?
I did. I remember playing senior when I was a junior. Mm-hmm. And so that was a big thing. So I was like the first junior to get a trophy for winning championship. One of those rare occasions that SAC beat QC in soccer. So that was like a
really, that's like the only
It was only once, you know. So I was on that team.
Back at those times, QC is great now, Comets. But back in those days, it was a rare thing to beat SAC in anything. But soccer, we had. And do you feel like the sporting helped you through high school? I mean, I think for a lot of young people,
it was an outlet. I remember mm-hmm. how I joined the soccer team. The principal at the time, Lou Adley, mm-hmm. saw me and my friend Ivan and I. He said, "Hey, y'all boys need to do something instead of being hanging out after school." So I was gravitated that he was starting a junior soccer program there, and that was the only sport. I tried the basketball team, it didn't work out. I tried the softball team, it didn't work out. I started wearing glasses, and it didn't work out any sport. Yeah. You know, it always dropping
and
off.
Globally, soccer is one of the great unifiers because it's a cheap sport. It can be played anywhere by anyone in any over the hill, under the street. It happens all over the world, which is why the World Cup's so exciting for some people like me.
Yeah.
So I don't want to waste. I want to get to where you are now. So as you came to the end of your schooling journey, you did your 12. You finished up grade 12, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And SAC. What were your options then?
Well, I didn't tell most people this. I was a tutor at SAC, smarter than most, an honor roll student, and so I had a number of persons who I was helping say, "Hey, you need to pass this exam." BGCSE was the
As
first
you were
year.
A student, you were a student tutor also.
Yes. So BGCSE is at the beginning. Like we were one of the first students to take the exam. And I remember at that point in time, my mother had a cancer scare, and so they were going to treatment for breast cancer or some sort like that. And then we was having two sets of exam and SATs all inside the same week. And exams, I assume I would have easily passed.
Yeah.
I failed.
Yeah.
I failed, right? And all of those who I tutored end up in at UB or COB at the time, and I couldn't get into COB.
Exams are the worst test of intelligence.
How what I can do now, right? And humor was that, special classes afterwards. I got an A in English and A in math, so I couldn't get any special classes to get in. I just couldn't get in at all. I forget what they call that when you just needed two more subjects. College prep. I couldn't get any college prep classes because I got A's in the subjects which you get college prep in. So I ended up in the States. I ended up in a business college in the United States. I remember we got to go on break.
We're going to go to a quick
break. I remember thinking I was going to embrace Islam. I really had the beanbags, bow tie wearing people, Farrakhan speeches. So I was very involved in the student movement, black movement in Miami. So I was very active in that. So I became an advocate. I wouldn't say an activist, a student advocate back then, going to town hall meetings and stuff like that. So that's what I did during my college career.
And that helped you with your speaking, et cetera. I want to ask about the religious life you had growing up when we come back, but break time for now.
Remember when Zoom was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
The secret is out. Thursdays have gone TCL at a live. Thursday, November 17th and November 24th, you can save big on select TCL devices. Shop early for the holidays and get the best deals on devices starting as low as $19. Alive has doorbuster specials, TCL savings, and more. So stop, drop, and run to your nearest Alive location closest to you. We are Alive. Terms and conditions apply.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio. We're talking to the man, the myth, the legend, Mr. C.A. Nuri, who I've always been fascinated about. And now I have the opportunity to grill him because he's stuck and we have to fill the show. And so where we left off, he was off to college in Florida, finding himself in being introduced to Islam at a whole bunch of different stages. And I just asked him during the break what his childhood faith education or background was. You were raised in...
I raised Baptist.
You were raised Baptist.
So I still embrace a Christian faith. I attend the Anglican Church at this present time.
The only thing, and I know you want me to keep going on to next things, but what was attractive to you about Islam? Because I find so many young men of intellect, intelligence, craving discipline and belonging are attracted to the Islamic faith. What was it about you?
It seemed, and especially with Malcolm X movement and the movie coming out it was attractive in terms of being a black man. It seemed to be a black religion. And amusingly, my law professor was a Jewish gentleman, right? A Jewish lawyer. So he's vehemently vexed at Farrakhan. And right now I'm saying, Farrakhan is the greatest, right? So we had a lot of debates and he embraced me and said, but I like you, Cecil. You cannot embrace Islam at all. They are prejudiced and Farrakhan is prejudiced and they don't like Jewish people. And so I had that conflict because I had to love this professor, right? And because he used to take me everywhere he go, where he went. And in fact, he used to come to the Bahamas on this Laker Air to go to Grand Bahama to gamble. So he is a big time gambler. So whilst he's whilst I was in school, he used to just say, Nuri, let me carry to this law library or carry to this expo. And he pay all expenses. And I'm just mentoring you. You need to be exposed as someone coming from the island. But fast forward in that, Islam just made sense. The idea that Jesus was a prophet, the idea that they had black Muslims there and that everything started basically in Africa and that that whole Middle East was actually Africa. It was attractive to me at that time.
It was attractive.
But I went to reach home and my mother said, stop that foolishness. So that ended that.
No, but I hear that again. It was attractive as far as education, history, culture.
And discipline. I needed discipline.
And again, the same thing that people... No, I'm not going to say that because that would sound like detrimental. But wherever people find belonging, and sometimes it's talked about like gang culture, but any kind of church or religion where you're like, you must do this, it's actually appealing, especially to young men of strong minds.
Mm-hmm.
They're saying, yes, help me show up and speak about it. Yes, people, lots of texts coming in saying, yes, SAC is referred to as a cult, all hail SAC, et cetera. So, yes, SACies, we hear you. My cousin from SAC's texting me, I'm on the air, Francesca. I can't take your call. Mm-hmm. So you came back to Nassau and you had this an experience of tertiary education abroad. Would you say you were educated?
I was introduced to knowledge. When I came back, I went back to COB. Mm-hmm. In fact, I didn't know that the institution was looking for me. And you find that odd. Does it mean that the institution was looking for me? Mm-hmm. Apparently, they knew who I was at SAC, right? And they realized I didn't got degrees to get in.
And the protocols,
but they wanted me in the institution, but my mother didn't tell me. She said, they already rejected you, so therefore I send you to the United States. You don't have to... She's proud. She's a proud woman.
Yes.
We're not going back at all. So when I returned, they said, you are C.A. Nuri? And I said, it was not C.A. Nuri then. You are Cecil Nuri? And I said, yeah, I'm Cecil Nuri. And I didn't pass to get into your school. So I'm just here to see if I can get in now. I have a degree, my first degree here. And so now he's looking for you for years. It's what you mean for years. And somehow, don't worry about it. You will come in at this term.
You slipped through the protocols, but they knew there was a...
I remember meeting Ian Strawn for the first time. And I remember I have dyslexic and I don't know syntax and can't write properly, right? And he heard about my essays inside my 301 classes and that I was not writing essays more than once. Whatever I did was the first grade I get is what I accepted.
Yes.
And every...
You don't
essay
respond well supposed, to criticism. No. You're like, that's it.
But COB at the time, you had to write the essays three times, mm-hmm. right? First grade, second grade, third grade, and that's what it is. And I said, I refuse to write it over, whatever the grade
it is.
This one. So I had to write one good essay, right? And then he heard about that. And I remember he said, oh, why don't you become a major in English. And I said, man, I can't read.
But also, I rebuke that. You said that as a suffering, experiencing dyslexia, you can't write properly. No, you just write differently. Your brain doesn't, your brain works fine. It's just differently done. And again, that can help with your artistry and creativity.
Yeah, so I write poetry and poetic in general.
We'll rephrase and we'll rename that as it is. And so I didn't even get to ask you if you had a favorite SAC teacher, because I know everyone comes out of SAC with one person.
My history teacher, Miss Burgess, was maybe my first favorite teacher at the time.
But as we move on, so what then? You came back from your schooling abroad. We can't go into the depth of that, but what then? Where did you go from there?
So I was looking for a law job, a legal job. I was got a paralegal degree. And
was law the goal at that time?
At that time, and of course, you know, you abandoned that too, right? And since I couldn't find that... I end up in business, so I wanted to be someone's personal assistant, right? Administrator. So I got a job being an administrator, taking care of the owner of the company. And from there, I got a concierge front desk job, and that's how I end up in tourism. Mm-hmm. And then from there, again, trying to be someone's personal assistant, I end up getting a butler job. And I wasn't a food and beverage butler. I was a front office butler, which did with filing, typing, bookings, stuff like that, personal assistant to VIPs. I was for a while,
and that's where we originally met back in the day in hospitality. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing like the hospitality industry, the service industry, to train you for all else in life. There's nothing more nothing that will make you think more quickly on your feet. Nothing more humbling and empowering than realizing that service is a strength. And you know this is gonna be a 2-part show, right?
Yeah, it looks
because we haven't even gotten into the juice that is you. Now, so from where have we, did you at that time have a calling, like saying, I have a voice, I need to write this, I need to speak this? How have we went from being a concierge of a butler, I mean, as the time ticks away, and I could talk to you for 5 hours about this, but where was the next step as we save this for another day, because we're going to go into depth about your writing, your published works, and the fact that you're now independently running your own show at this time.
Can you imagine?
You're like, yes.
There were a few people know I'm actually published. I try not to even mention that
anymore.
But
we are going to mention that because your work is necessary, extraordinary, and we need to celebrate our Bahamian authors, but we can't speak our own truth. But I mean, did you at that time have a calling? Like, I know I have more in me, and there was a growth need in you?
I felt special, as if I was called to be something greater than I was. But I always had an inferiority complex where I just couldn't make that
imposter
next level.
Syndrome? Would that be right? Or is
Who
that too?
Who knows? I think I needed mentorship. Yeah. And there wasn't any male mentor in my neighborhood to say, well, I see where you're trying to go.
Yes.
And let me guide you through that. Mm-hmm. And like I said, I was smartest one in my family. Mm-hmm. And my sister lived abroad at the time. So I didn't have that mentorship from a big brother or big sister to say, well, let me help you along. So mostly it was me searching, trying to find myself and say, this didn't work, so let me stop. So I quit a lot of things instead of persevering through to say, hey, this is what you need to do.
And I think so many young people are in that situation right now. Like, as we were talking about the fact, like, you know, Sparky was talking about his childhood and home alone and parents working multiple jobs. I don't think that's ancient history. I think that's the reality for a lot of children now. And so now the mentorship needs that have still you are where you are. So even with the lack of that, even the lack of without an example or a guiding grace at that time, you still made the next step. What was the next step in that direction? When did you decide that, you know, I have writing a value to that should be voiced publicly? I have a voice.
And mind you, that I fell into that. It wasn't that I see we have another call. It wasn't that I said, well, I'm going to be.
You fell or you flew? Because I feel like you were elevated into that.
That could be elevated too. It wasn't that I was brilliant and said, boy, I want to write. I remember coming home when I was 19-ish, and I said, how come there's no poetry association? And I'm writing Veer Chase, Miss Roll, and her name, Telsey Turner Roll, and Sylvia Larimore Crawford. And I remember I penned a letter saying, oh, this is what I want for poetry in the Bahamas. And I got a response from Sylvia Larimore Crawford asking, who are you? Right? And so I just came home and I write and I'm looking for a venue, an outlet that I can do that. And she said, hey, do you want to write for us? Mm-hmm. And I remember as a 19-year-old writing to these senior writers, poetry.
That takes guts and energy.
Yeah. And they said, man, you bold to even challenge them. And I'm writing
to
James Catlin. Yeah. I'm writing to James Catlin. Great people, you know, said, hey, we having a meeting. I need you all to come
here. James Catlin. My grandmother took us to every single summer madness. everywhere, front row.
Uh-huh. And I remember even traveling with that Writer Society of the Bahamas and reading one poem, right? Mm-hmm. Again, I had issues with public communicating, yes, publicly and stuttering. Yes. I stuttered a lot. So I remember they worked with me and grilling me and said, okay, this is how you pronounce pain instead of pain.
So you found the female mentorship as well.
Yeah, I found that. And when I travel, I have some scary stories of going to Cat Island to read and ghosts taking me and kidnapping me.
You
can imagine. Yeah, I remember ghosts kidnapping me and
that's
I have some stories.
People be like that.
Yeah. I ain't going to Cat Island again because ghosts stand there. But I remember sad stories like that. Yeah.
I was waiting for you to say that about Ackland's people. You'll get too scary. Imagine.
Yeah, we're scary. Yeah. We scared of magic. Yeah. Them people just do magic. We ain't going there.
I feel like it's been magical talking to you, and we're not going to have enough time to finish this up. Mm-hmm. Because, again, we haven't quite got to the fact that from this platform, and a lot of people start in humble platforms and do such greatness on behalf of us all as a people. You had strong women in your life. We look for strong women throughout society. You are a strong voice in our society, and so well.
Am I well-liked yet? Because I don't believe anyone like me at all.
I like you.
Yeah, you like. Oh, it's good ones.
I like you. Mr. Williams, why didn't he come today? Yeah. I bought him treats. But I like the fact that you're unafraid of any conversation, but you handle it with a certain level of, belligerence, but class. Like, there's nothing that I feel that won't be well discussed if it's in your hands. And so I salute you for that. And I will thank you as a personal mentor to me. You have mentored me well thus far. And we are going to continue this conversation next time, Guardian Radio. If anyone wants to know the juice on CA Nuri, please text me your questions. And we'll make sure we get into the grits next time. We kept it PG-13 this show. But next show, we're going to find out who he really is. Actually, next show is for women's one, isn't it?
Yeah, this has been Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri, and my guest host today was Catherine. Let's see if I can pronounce your last name again. Chisnell.
You did that well. See?
Yeah, that's good. See? That's good. That's good. And she'll be joining me. What I'll do is make space for her again, that she'll continue this interview. And so we have a fun time.
Hope I'm not on camera right now.
Oh, yes, you definitely are on camera right now.
That's me not able to handle the mic. Thank you all for being here, and thank you for sharing a little bit of where you have risen from, and we appreciate your voice.
Guided Radio AM. Have a wonderful day.